Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome into Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can find them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975. And in between episodes of our show here, you can read their blogs covering all things Houston sports over on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, what we've learned from Houston's young season. We check in on Lance McCullers' journey back and why you're going to hear the phrase torpedo bat for the foreseeable future. Charlie, first of all, I would be remiss if I didn't call out our shirts, which I can only call Carnival Cruise formal. Second, we've completed one series within this young season. Astros scratch across 6 runs over 3 games, but good enough to take 2 of 3 from the Mets with the Giants series on deck starting Monday night, which sets us up as of this recording as Jordan Hicks, Logan Webb, and Landon Roop versus Blanco, Wesneski, and Valdez. The sample size is extremely small, but that's never stopped us before. So let's take out our microscope and get down to business. What did we learn from the series against New York? And what are you looking for from the Giants series?
Well, first, I believe 95 to 100% of the video consumers of Stone Cold Stros would agree the three of us are here for our good looks, not for our fashion choices. More observations than learning anything. It was one weekend of baseball, but the Astros win a series from a team that had a better 2024 than they did. The Mets won 89 games in a much fiercer division at the top with the Phillies and Braves in there, and they went to the National League Championship Series and lost very competitively to the Dodgers, and then they had Juan Soto. So the Astros taking 2 out of 3, a couple of sellouts at Daikin Park. Good way to start the season. Now, if you're all about offense, okay, I understand. Well, if the Astros bat 176 for this season with a 514 OPS, they're going to suck and lose 100 games. Well, the chances of them batting 176 for the season, having an OPS of 514, we're losing 100 games, 0 across the board. But talk about sample size. Martin Maldonado has twice as many hits, as many RBI as Yordan Alvarez so far this season. So Yordan goes 1 for 8. Now, the one delivered a game-winning hit. Christian Walker, 1 for 12, hitting in some hard luck. Isak Paredes, 1 for 9. It just doesn't mean anything. It's one weekend of games. But not so much as what we learned, but as what we believe to be vital to this team's long-season success. Hey, 3 games in, 3 excellent starting pitching performances, and that is the tentpole of the 2025 Houston Astros.
Yep, I'll echo that. It's going to be about the starting pitching for this team. I think the offense will pick up, but even before the year started, I thought it was going to be about the pitching, and we saw a little bit of that. Hunter Brown looked incredible, man. That first inning when he's just painting 100 miles per hour, should have had that strikeout to finish the inning there instead of that fly ball to Jake Myers at the wall, but he really impressed me. Spencer Arrigetti came out, and I thought he looked terrific too, so... And Fromber's Fromber. I love what I'm seeing from the starting pitching. Bullpen scared you a little bit there. But, you know, they got the job done when you really needed it. So you'll take that. You're seeing them take more pitches. The hitting with guys in scoring position, they're just awful at so far. Something they struggled with last year. So hopefully that comes around. But you're liking what you're seeing with Paredes and Walker, seeing a lot of pitches, even Dubon seeing more. Nice to see Peña get some lift on the ball, get a home run to start the season. So I'm liking those things. I am seeing some struggling with breaking balls. I thought Christian Walker really struggled against breaking pitches in that final game of the series. So hopefully that's something he makes an adjustment. And, you know, Cam Smith, I'm ready to – hopefully he'll be back in the lineup for at least a couple games in this series. I want to see him. And McCormick got a hit. They got him in there. They're kind of moving guys around. He saw Dubon get a start. I wonder how much a spot is going to do this, where he's kind of working everybody in. DeZinzo kind of some ugly at bats. So we'll see if they go back to Cam Smith or if they're going to keep mixing him in.
Yeah, I think that first series, he wanted to get pretty much everybody at least one start. Let's pour some more buckets into the observation pool, right? More than what we learned. The second baseman go 0 for the weekend. I mean, not exactly stunning that you're going to get quality offensive output from a combination of Brendan Rodgers and Mauricio Dubon. Dubious. Joe Espada with the early Hyperbole of the Month Award nominee, talking about going to Josh Hader as the best closer in the game. What game would that be? At least coming off 2024. Maybe he's awesome at Scrabble or Dominoes or something. But the bigger takeaway or mix in with that, we'll see what becomes a straight up pattern. A one-run game, Jose Altuve pulled defensively in the ninth inning. Right, we saw it with Cam Smith earlier in the series, but pulling Jose Altuve in a one-run game. In the Arrighetti start, Altuve didn't really play the only hit of that game off Arrighetti, a Soto high fly ball to left field. He didn't play it very well. It's not a ball that you can say he should have caught, but he mistimed his jump at the wall. And the reality, a 5'6" guy wasn't going to catch that. 6 foot or more typically sized outfielder, Yordan Alvarez, for instance, probably does catch that ball. So while I think Altuve is going to settle in to be just fine, making the routine catches and so forth, there are always going to be defensive liability concerns with him. Newness to the position, size, arm strength. But the risk of when you pull a guy in a one-run game is, what if it winds up a tie game and Altuve's turn in the batter's box comes back around and you have a grossly inferior player in there because you pulled him. So we'll see if Espada settles into a firm role with that, or maybe in a one or two run game is when he does it. And you're at a larger lead. Is there the possibility, especially if the second baseman aren't hitting at all, does Altuve move to second base once in a while for a final inning or two with a better outfielder? But that was one of the things that was striking in the Sunday game. But again, 2 out of 3 over the Mets, as the Texas Rangers were winning 3 out of 4 over the Red Sox. Alex Bregman, a puny 4 singles and 17 at-bats. But the big one there, as we follow McCullers making his way back, just one start, and his arm is always a ticking time bomb. But Jacob deGrom was sensational for the Rangers. 5 dominant shutout 2-hit innings with 6 strikeouts. If you're an Astros fan, don't be rooting for deGrom to get hurt. But if he is to stay healthy and make, say, even 25 starts, that's an Astros issue in yet again winning the American League West.
Yeah, and I guess on the spectrum of success of former Astros, Kyle Tucker with 7 RBI already in the season. On the other hand, Ryan Presley, 9 ERA with a 3.33 whip over 3 innings pitched, not necessarily endearing himself to the Chicago fans early. Part of the narrative that Josh referred to about the sometimes anemic offense for Houston has been that it happens primarily at home. What I'm looking for, as we're looking ahead to the season, is I'd like for the Astros to shake some of that off. And I would like it to start with guys like Paredes and Walker, considering they haven't been part of that in the past. So I feel like they are the least likely to be affected by whatever that thing is that's preventing Houston from being effective offensively at home. You know, and give credit where it's due. The Mets pitched them well. Also looking forward to seeing how Walker responds to this early slump, if you even want to call 3 games of with one hit a slump. But had some, as Josh mentioned, some bad-looking at-bats against breaking pitching. But also, really, what I'm looking forward to is, in the theme of pitching being the cornerstone of this team this season, I mentioned the series with Blanco, Wesneski, and Valdez. Blanco, I'm definitely looking to see if he can repeat success from last year. And then, I mean, that sets them up really, really good, regardless of the health of DeGrom, right?
Well, the Rangers can say if they get quality work from John Gray when he gets back. Jack Leiter made a very good first start for them. If Kumar Rocker has a solid season, the Rangers' lineup potential top to bottom is at least as good as that as the Astros. So, hey, who wins the season series? The 18 games between the teams, the 13 games between the teams could dictate who winds up winning. But, you know, be concerned with yourself and the 162 games will play out relative to your competition. But if the Astros have the four horsemen of the rotation, that give them 120 starts, and they're not going to be quality starts 110 of those times, but bulk of work compared to other rotations, the Astros can have a staff, a starting staff, as good as anyone else in the American League. And there are exceptions, see 2024 Seattle Mariners, but if you have the best rotation or one of the two or three best rotations in the league, especially in the era of six teams getting in at least as a wild card, the Astros will wind up back in the playoffs. So unreasonable expectations. I mean, Blanco was just marvelous. I mean, second in the league with a 2.80 ERA. Can he replicate or better that? Yes, he probably won't. It's okay if he doesn't, if he comes in at a 3.25 earned run average, right? Wes Neski in today's game, if he gets you into the sixth inning more often than not and carries an ERA of four or lower for a number five starter, that is okay. And to just quickly speak to the corner infielders, right? Paredes, the swing tailor-made for Daikin Park, that should play out favorably over time. I'm encouraged, first time watching him a series of games and really focusing on him. He played a very solid defensive third base. I mean, he's not going to be what Bregman was, but solid is all right if you're bringing the thump with it. First base side, Christian Walker's basically a 250 hitter. So no one should be thinking, hey, why can't he hit 300 with 35 home runs and 120 runs batted in? Because he never has done it, and he's 34 years old. He's a 253 career hitter. He was 251, I believe it was, last year. So if he hits to his career norm, he draws not a Lance Berkman-type number of walks, but a decent number of walks, and he slugs. And he's been an 800 OPS guy three consecutive seasons. If the Astros can book Christian Walker at 800, he will be a major plus for this team.
Yeah, no doubt about that. You're going to need Christian Walker. It's maybe the strikeouts is what kind of makes you feel not so great after just one series. That's it, guys. But four strikeouts and 12 at-bats, not ideal. But you look at Altuve, and he's got five hits, but four strikeouts to go along with that. So this is kind of modern baseball. Guys are going to swing and miss. But to your point, Brandon, like we were talking, there are just some ugly at-bats where Christian Walker had some opportunities where they were just throwing him so many breaking balls. And in that game, in total, that third game, just a lot of sliders the entire lineup saw in that game. So that's not going to happen every week. And to be fair, the way Christian Walker is just knocking the crap out of fastballs, he had several balls that he hit over 111 miles an hour. Yeah, you don't want to have to throw him fastballs if you can get away with throwing him breaking balls. So that makes sense. Back to the pitching, though, I think this is going to be a staff that depends on this. It's going to be, I don't think they're going to score as many runs this year. I think the offense will be okay. You lose Bregman and Tucker. I don't think they're going to be quite what they were. Altuve, another year older, that kind of thing. But I think that's going to mean that starting pitching has to be good. And then getting to those guys, your haters, your Abreus, that bridge to them is going to be important. So I've really liked what I've seen from Brian King so far. He's been a guy that's come in and looked really good. I feel confident in him. I know Taylor Scott had a great year last year, but I'm liking what I'm seeing from King. He doesn't light up the radar gun, but as they talk about it, his extension is so good that it makes his fastball seem a little harder. And he was good last year. So this is just kind of more of him just evolving with the Astros pitching coaches and getting better and growing confidence. So I'm getting to the point that I feel pretty good with him as your seventh inning guy. And, you know, Abreu, I'm just like, you throw 99 miles an hour, dude. Why are you afraid of your fastball? What the hell's going on? I know the slider's amazing, but let's use that fastball a little bit more because the walks are starting to be a concern. That's when you get frustrated with relief pitchers is when they don't make the batter earn it. When they go up there and they just walk guy after guy, you're just asking for trouble, especially late in ball games.
I also liked Okert as well. I mean, maybe I know he's a journeyman and his ERA last year, I think, was over four, near five. But relief pitchers have that every other year thing that happens with them. Sometimes they come out of nowhere and just have a great year. We also talk about the Astros pitching car wash. He did say that he feels like a better pitcher coming out of Astros training camp than he did going into it. So clearly the coaching staff has been able to instill some confidence in him. So that's good. Charlie, you mentioned while we're talking about pinching that Lance McCullers in his a rehab start in AAA. We have a little update there with him striking out the side in the first and the second. Got a fly out, then gave up a single, wild pitch, walk, two RBI double before inducing two flyouts to end the inning. No further news on Luis Garcia, which seems more ominous by the day, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. League news, you know, we're talking about keeping our eye on guys like DeGrom or oft-injured guys. Max Scherzer removed from his first start with the Jays with right lat soreness. Maybe he was sleeping on one of those beds that the Astros have been using over the past few years that induces all that neck soreness. Probably worth bringing up here, as it's been one of the early divisive topics in the league. But on the heels of switching to what's being coined as the torpedo bat, the Yankees have hit 15 homers through their first three games. Do you guys think there's anything to this other than just it being some sort of mental placebo thing? Like, do you think this is really attributed to this? And I guess, do you think we're more likely to see as this goes on, if this continues to play out in this way, that the league's more likely to adopt these sort of bats? Or do you think there's more likely to be restrictions placed on them?
The Astros should have an expedited shipment arriving at Daikin Park any moment now. Look, there's science backing this up. The weight distribution of the bat, moving weight from the end of the bat to the barrel, the sweet spot where hitters are trying to make contact. If there's more heft to that 6-7-inch portion of the bat, it makes fundamental sense. Also, with the weight distribution of the bat, that bat speed picks up a mile or two per hour, right? This is a game of inches and miles per hour. Every incremental addition helps. Let's also throw in, it was one series of games. Saturday, when the Yankees hit 9, the wind was blowing straight out, 15 miles per hour. Everyone knows right center is pretty much a wind tunnel blowing out at Yankee Stadium. And by the way, Aaron Judge is not swinging a torpedo bat, and he hit one about 1,000 feet among the four that he hit in three games. But you know, copycat business, at least curiosity. I'm sure a number of guys on every team in the big leagues already saying, hey, can I get one of those to at least swing it in BP and see what it feels like? But it's totally legal within the rules. The diameter of the bat can't be beyond 2.61 inches, I believe, at its maximum point. So if there's more to it, hey, baseball likes offense, chicks dig the long ball, and as we've seen, pitching ever more dominate and batting averages depress. Full speed ahead. Not damn the torpedoes. Get some of those torpedo bats.
Yeah, and let's face it, if the Yankees are having success with it, MLB couldn't be happier. They're not changing anything. That's what they want to see. So it's going to continue, and that's fine. They're legal. Everybody can use them. Then it's, you know, it's fine. If everybody has an opportunity to use them, it's fair. So no issue with it. Yeah, give it a shot. Give it a try. What does it hurt? If you like the feel of it, cool. If not, go back to the original. And yeah, like Charlie mentioned, all the Yankees guys aren't using them. So it's not just that. And they play in a tiny ballpark. There's going to be a lot of home runs, but you just, three games, 15 home runs. Like, wow, the Astros have one home run. The one Pena just barely got over into the Crawford boxes. So yeah, I think give it a shot. It's something fun, something different to talk about. And who knows, maybe this could be the new way. Maybe this is the most used bat 3 years from now. Who can tell? But yeah, you know, at this point, the sample size is just so small. You know, we'll see where we're at after a month or so. Is it still, do you feel like giving hitters an advantage? They like the bats, or is it kind of getting a little more even and getting back to normal?
I'll give two quick analogies on it. If you have a kid in Little League, you're not having your kid swing a wood bat if everyone else is using aluminum or whatever the alloy is the thing now. And more nefariously, the steroid era. How many guys who didn't want to cheat were thinking, well, if I'm not cheating, I'm leaving myself at a blatant competitive disadvantage to so many other guys, so I will succumb to the temptation. Well, if there is any sort of degree of belief or curiosity that the torpedo bats are delivering an advantage to the batter, what batter is not going to try something wholly legal?
The league is pretty strict on things that they feel gives a disproportionate advantage. And they're not shy about putting restrictions on the types of bats. We remember, I think it was last season. No, it was season before last when Martin Maldonado was using that bat that was gifted to him by Albert Pujols that was banned by the league. Now, I think that was more due to because that sort of bat shattered. So that was more of a player safety issue. But we look at corked bats, a very controversial topic because the science isn't really solid on it. But it's banned nonetheless because it's just widely held as a belief that there is an advantage there. In a league in which they have really done their best to stamp out the major offense with, you know, dejuicing the balls or however you want to say it, the dead ball era that we're in now. You're a student of the game, so you tell me your perspective. But what's fundamentally different between a corked bat and a torpedoed bat?
A bat has to be one piece of wood and nothing but wood. You know, you can scoop out the end of it to a limited inch and a half, I think it is, of depth, you know, to lighten the very end of the bat where if you're making any contact, the ball's not going anywhere. So you want that weight distribution, again, barrel of the bat. So, you know, it's not like it's one of those fun kid wiffle bats with the giant barrel. It just looks a little larger because it's tapered at the end. Some, I guess, are calling it the bowling pin bat versus the torpedo bat. And it's not as if the Yankees just pop these out over the weekend. First time anyone's ever seen it. Giancarlo Stanton evidently was using one for some of last season. So there's nothing about these bats that says illegal. And, you know, if quicker bat speeds and a little more exit velocity helps hitting, not home run hitting ideally, but more balls in play and doubles and triples action plays. Ah, balls in play. I don't care what the barrel bat is, you know, trampoline effect, you still have to put bat on ball. And that's been the biggest problem in this era in offense. Something like 15 times in 16 years, a new record for strikeouts. And adjusting the barrel size of the bat, unless you allow it to become like a waffle iron or something, you know, the technology is not going to impact putting the bat on the ball.
Yeah, and just the way pitching's gone the last few years, just, you know, everybody in the bullpen, they have at least every team has a few guys in the bullpen. They can throw 100 miles an hour. And it's just even guys like Chipper Jones was talking about how he didn't know if he could hit to the level that he did as a player in today's game. It's just there's so many advantages with, you know, spin rate and just so many guys just throwing with so much more velocity and all the relief pitchers that come in and out. And you only get to see a guy only so many times. So maybe anything just to level the field a little bit, give offense a little more advantage. And if it comes through technology, that's fine because everybody has the opportunity to use these bats. But of course, these hitters have played their whole lives with bats not like this. So some guys, it's just not going to feel comfortable and they're not going to make the switch just because they spent so many years getting used to what they're used to, which I completely understand. But I think you could see if guys start getting into slumps and they're fighting it a little bit, kind of like when Kyle Tucker would go to the batting gloves, if he'd get in a slump. And yeah, I wonder if these guys are going to start going to these other bats, if they're just kind of going through it and not having success, just to try something different, see if it gives them a spark.
Good stuff. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts and apps like Apple or Spotify, please give us a 5-star rating. We do really appreciate that. Our next scheduled episode drops Thursday, so make sure you subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston, and our other channel, Sports Map Texans. We drop bonus episodes as news breaks. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. And until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.